Welcome to Indie Radio Garden. This week's highlights from community radio in the Philadelphia region.
This program brings ordinary citizens to the air to discuss issues related to health, race, safety, workers' rights, and the will to survive in pandemic times.
The first clip comes from WJYN LP 98.9 Uptown Entertainment and Development. The host of The Tall Talk Show, Latif White, interviews Erica Alexander and her co-host Whitney Dow, two hosts of the podcast, Reparations, The Big Payback. They talk about white fragility, white privilege, and reparations.
I don't need to understand you, and you don't need to understand me, that this is this pressure to say, okay, we have to have a discussion where we come to some sort of agreement. I cannot possibly understand what it's like to live in America as a black person, a black American. How could I possibly understand that? And so I should focus, and so this idea that somehow there has to be this like meeting of common ground, I think that's one of the things that kind of has to be dispensed with, and that this idea that no, we have to sort of focus on, we have to focus on what we know, what's right, and with whether or not, I think that's one of the things that Erica and I try and model, is that you can work towards a common goal with different motivations and recognize that both white people and black people have different motivations in that. And Eric and I have different motivations for doing this podcast, different motivations for doing the documentary. We have different motivations for advocating for reparations. That doesn't mean that we're not both working hard towards the same goal. Right. And I think that we have to recognize that we do have different motivations in there, as opposed to somehow we're going to come together in this common understanding, because I believe that some divisions just can't be crossed. But that doesn't mean we can't move towards, to an agreed upon goal.
Absolutely. Eric, what are your thoughts?
And if I may say a little bit too, because you asked what could be done, we kind of, to look at what could be done, you have to look at what was done, what was undone. Mm-hmm. And I think that if you look at the disadvantages that are baked in, you talk about the financial, we've talked about real estate. Ta-Nehisi mm-hmm. Coates famously wrote his essay that talked about the disadvantages baked into the Chicago system, redlining, all that, judicial, stop and frisk, all the educational, military, corporate systems, everything. There's white terrorism acting on us all the time. Right. Mm-hmm. And we can see it out loud when we look at the Capitol and see them swarm it, breaking windows, mm-hmm. because they don't see themselves as owners of the future. And they are right. It is a wrap. There is a rebranding of America, and they're fearing for it. And instead of saying, why don't I go teach myself a new skill set? Mm-hmm. They're gonna blame everybody else for what they ain't got. But I say, if after all these years you ain't got nothing, that's on you. And they do have everything. Right now, they're still in the majority in terms of power. Yeah. It will be for a very long time, but instead of seeing that as an opportunity to start to find common ground and create the America that is the future, we find different ways to recreate the same old thing. So what can be done? We can do what Stacey Abrams has done down south. And organize and try to stop legislation that stops us from voting. If we get people in there and that in those spaces that can continue to obstruct and challenge us like that, we'll never get anything done. But I think people now see that instead of saying, oh, voting doesn't matter, they see that it matters very much. And so we can do that at the very base. What John Lewis wanted was to keep the vote sacred and to keep us going there and let it be fair. If you lose on your ideas, then you've lost a fair fight. But if you lose because it's rigged and they made it too difficult for people to do something that should be a basic American right, then there's a problem. So I think that that's what we can do, is that we can be good citizens and good people and good community members, but also honor the ancestors and everything mm-hmm. they fought for and died for, and vote. And then also, when you look at George Floyd and what happened there and the unfairness of that, we must continue to hold people's feet to the fire and stand up and deliver mm-hmm. for people like him who's walking around with COVID, jobless, and they thought that a counterfeit $20 bill was worth his death, was in payment for it. Mm-hmm. That's what his life was worth. And we say, no, it's not. Now we're going to, you know, we want to bring the bondsman in and stop killing black people, stop killing, attacking Asian Americans.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Exactly.
So what we can do is pay attention and do what we've always done, but we have to do action. We have to stay vigilant.
Right.
That's it.
I got a question. So I was at the annual legislative conference in 2019, and I was working with the Congressional Black Caucus. And I did see Erica there, and I was just curious about what senators and reps can we back up and support that will be pushing reparations in the future. I mean, maybe the whole CBC, or is there anybody in particular?
There's a lot of them. Right now, there's a list of them who support the bill, H.R. 40, in Congress. Sheila Jackson Lee is the main one. She's in the lead. Ayanna Pressley, some of the, you know, the usual suspects mm-hmm. are there doing that, and we should support their campaign so they can do it. But we also need to find out who's not on that list and push them to get on the list.
Yeah.
We support the people who are on that list and make sure they can stay there to do their jobs and more importantly, to have conversations and put these things in place. But if we don't push the people who aren't on that list, we're not going to get anything done. And often, because they don't look like us, if you have a legislator that actually is in your district, they may not look like you, we don't necessarily, you know, have that dialogue. And we should absolutely go up to them mm-hmm. and say, you represent me. I'm looking for you to support this bill, and see how many times we can do that and push them forward in a way that they haven't been asked to do.
So I have a question for Whitney. How do we go about dealing with white fragility and white guilt when discussing reparations? Because that's the issue that I deal with on a constant basis, even with my casual friends. Every time I talk about it, it's, nobody really wants to talk about it, and they get really defensive. And I'm like, guys, so what? Yeah. What advice can you give me so that I could, I don't know, try to get rid of that guilt?
I mean, that's a really tough question. I mean, that's a really, really tough question. Right? Now you put out, like, what to do about white fragility and how to talk to white people about it. I mean, I think that one of the things that I think that, you know, that is maybe helpful to understand is that white people are in this really, really weird space now, right? Mm-hmm. Is that they're basically everything we've ever told ourselves about ourselves is being revealed to be false. Mm. You know, whiteness is tied to American exceptionalism, the stories we told ourselves about Americans, how we're sort of this essentially good people. And that even though we always knew this story was false, we kind of covered it up with these apocryphal stories about what it means to be American.
Mm.
So what's so sort of strange now, and I think that's what you saw happening on January 6th, is that for white people to accept the reality of their condition is an existential threat to their existence, right? And right. So when you say white fragility, you're not just talking about, like, it's not fragility, you're like, for somebody to accept that everything they believe about themselves is not true, that the moral structure in which they exist in the universe is false, that's like a heavy thing.
Right.
So, but what always really baffles me, and this is, and again, I don't really have good advice, because I have the same experience talking to white mm-hmm. people about it. They get very, very, very defensive very, mm-hmm. very quickly. And I'm like, you know, you're not responsible for how you were born. You're responsible for how you live your life. So it's actually really simple. And I think once you kind of, as a white person, sort of accept the conditions of what you're born into. Oh, the other thing I want to say, too, is that mm-hmm. one of the things I think you're also up against with liberal white people is things they think that they're not part of the paradigm. They think that they're so invested in being good that they feel that they're... Oh, can you hear me?
Yes. Yeah, you're good. Oh, yeah, you're good.
So they're so invested in being sort of good people that it's really hard for them to see themselves that, yeah, but you still benefit from this system. Your actions perpetuate the system. But once you actually see that you kind of accept this idea of white privilege and how it sort of drives things, it suddenly empowers you to see opportunities to take action all over the place. So, I mean, I feel like I'm giving you a really bad, like not a good advice. I'm more just sort of saying like trying, I'm more diagnosing the problem than giving a solution, because it's really, really, really complex for white people right now. But, and I also, I would say, the thing that I think is always sort of strange is I say, when Erica says, it's, you know, it's already a wrap. The reality is like they're afraid of something that isn't really coming in a way, meaning that, yes, there's going to change, but what they're going to give up is so tiny compared to what they're going to gain. And that what they gain by being like full, like by having like a full partnership with other Americans is so far beyond anything that they have now that they're trying to hold on to. As I said, I think that it's more what we white people can do who believe in this to try and reframe the story. That it's not a story of loss. Even though you have to give up something, it's also a story of gaining something. It's really about gaining your humanity.
Right. And I also have to say, as a, you know, I'm a Haitian, I'm first generation Haitian.
Same.
And, you know, listening to your podcast, I also experienced a lot of can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, here we go.
Okay, can you hear?
I've been having to play the mute button game with this thing. I'm figuring it out. We're good. Okay.
But I just wanted to say to Whitney that, you know, also has a Haitian American woman, I also was horrified about the knowledge about the atrocity of slavery, because in school they don't tell you everything. Right. They romanticize it. So when, after like listening to your podcast, I didn't know what to do with that information. And Erica, like, what, you know, it's such a deep and emotionally like driven thing. And you know, what is a person supposed to do with all that information afterwards, Erica?
That's a good question. I think you take in what you can and you try to see where in your life you might have more power than you think. We may never get reparations, and a lot of people who were interviewed for the podcast believe that we will not. But they are still working towards it. It's not important that we believe it. We believe that it's possible. We push forward and things appear. Because of the hard work of people who, even if they didn't think they could see it in their lifetime, thought it was an idea whose time has come. So I believe what you do with the knowledge is you do the best you can with it. And if it makes you stronger in what you're doing now, then good. If it makes you act or react in a way that you think can move something forward, then great. If it makes you pull back, get pessimistic and get jaded, then you were just looking for an excuse to do that anyway. And you don't need that. You can just turn on any sort of Instagram post and get down about it. You'll get down about life, you know, because there's so much negativity out there and really hard things that Black people have to look at every day that truly depress us and send us into a coma. So but I'd like to think that with knowledge comes freedom and strength. Yes. And they tried to take knowledge from us by not teaching us, as in slavery, how to read. And ultimately, we outfoxed them because we created new language. We created language in our dance and in our music. We created the excellence of being Black and being and pushing forward and persevering. But we also showed them time and time again the power of our deep understanding of forgiveness. We forgive better than almost anybody I ever saw in my life. And that's a gift.
Yeah.
But I don't want to become the reason why we don't move forward. There's forgiveness, and then there's, yes, I may forgive you, but I still will attack that wrong. I still will hold you accountable. I still will show up until you have to give it up. And again, going back to John Lewis, he did it for the beloved community. He did it through nonviolence, and he's able to win. He's a true superhero, a true American superhero. So what do you do with it? I think you use it as fuel.
Excellent. Yeah, so I have a my quick thing. I know we had limited time with y'all. We're pushing it a little bit. You listen to WJYN 98.5 FM Uptown Radio. My thing is always like, people think about money, but my little funny saying is, 40%, I meant what I meant. Because you say 40 acres and a mule, I figure, well, 40, what about 40% off of taxes? Mm. 40% off of certain things. Just give me my 40%, and I meant what I meant. What do y'all think about that?
I'm with that, Latif. College, I am with that.
Education, right? Everything. This 40% off.
It's
everything.
A great idea. Like, that's applicable. Yeah,
40% off of taxes, all that stuff. Everything. Education. We get like a default at the end of the year. You know what I mean?
It's factored in.
That's what I'm thinking. Nobody's spending any money. You're just getting a discount.
I love it. You know, a lot of people put forth programs. William Darity thinks there should be baby bonds, and he has a specific program. You talk to Bob Johnson there. He's talking another way. He thinks it's through real estate. There's all sorts of different ways to attack it. And I think, Latif, a lot of people said, why not give it to us in tax breaks? Just automatically for several generations say you don't pay those taxes. But we're also in one of the groups that's in complete poverty. There's people that don't pay that much taxes compared to what, you know, what has been taken, borrowed from us over 400 years of slavery. So that's the problem. And so for people who may have a better income, that would be a great thing. I think education, scholarships, you know, not having to pay for schooling for several generations. If you qualify, you get in, it's paid for. That would be tremendous. I also believe, besides taxes, which I believe real estate, having no interest loans, that would be great. So there's some great ideas out there. And Latif, they should call you to the White House.
Oh, hey! Latif in the White House. All right.
All right, well, I know y'all got to get out of here. But thank you so much for your time. Yes. We really appreciate it. If there's anything, any information you want to get out there, feel free to say it. Let people know where they can find you, where they can find the podcast and everything. I personally enjoy it. I will keep listening. It's great information. So please feel free to give your info out.
Yes, they should go to iHeart. And we were called Reparations, The Big Payback. They can also go wherever you listen to your podcasts or shows. You'll find us on Apple and or Spotify. Or those places. But here's what we're asking people to do. We'd like you to listen and follow us and rate it. Right now, we are getting really torn down by racists and bots.
Wow.
You can tear down your ratings. You know how that goes. So if we can start to match their enthusiasm with people who say, listen, whether I agree with you all the time or not, I'm going to support this, and I think you're doing a good thing, please do that. And feel free to rate us and write us a note and tell us what we could do better, or recommend something that you want to hear in the future, or subject. Right now we have 12 episodes. We don't know if we'll go forward after that, but we certainly would like to know that if you are enjoying it, what are you enjoying about it?
Right.
And if you're not, tell us that as well.
The second audio comes from the first Scrap Radio Workshop on the creation of radio content with gender perspective. A participant, Joanna Hagen Wickender, is the program director of WGGTLP 92.9 G-Town Radio, and she delivers her homework about looking at the normalization of domestic violence in rock and pop music. She invites us to make a profound reflection on our responsibility as broadcasters in spreading the message of patriarchal violence, even through the music that we broadcast on the radio every day.
Back before COVID, when I used to have to commute to an office, I was driving home from a long, annoying day at my job, listening to Johnny Cash's At Folsom Prison. This is a record I own and have probably listened to countless times over the course of the past few decades. But for some reason today, on this day, I was giving it a hard listen, and I was struck by the sadness of the album.
I hear the train a-coming, it's rolling around a bend, and I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on.
For those of you unfamiliar with Johnny Cash's At Folsom Prison, it was Johnny Cash's first live album, recorded in January 1968 in front of an audience of men incarcerated at Folsom State Prison in California. For the album, he did two live performances backed by musicians June Carter, Carl Perkins, Luther Perkins, Marshall Grant, and W.S. Holland. The album consists of 15 songs from those two performances. Many attribute the album to revitalizing his career after a hiatus due to drug use. I was listening to Dark as the Dungeon.
Where it's dark as a dungeon, damp as the dew. Danger is double, pleasures are few, where the rain never falls.
And then the next track, I Still Miss Someone, and beginning to feel really emotionally raw.
In the darkened corner, cause I still miss someone. Though I never got over those blue eyes, I see them everywhere.
It really is a sad album. Then the fifth track, Cocaine Blues, hits an upbeat swing, and I'm ready for something upbeat at this point.
Early one morning while making the rounds, I took a shot of cocaine and I shot my woman down.
Wait a minute. I shot my woman down?
Early one morning while making the rounds, I took a shot of cocaine and I shot my woman down.
And his audience is cheering. The song proceeds with Johnny's signature jaunty train track shuffle. This musically bouncy shuffle about evading the law and trying to avoid taking responsibility for killing his woman. Let me just pause here and point out the use of the possessive, my woman. Woman is property. Finally, we get to the end of his story. The judge sentences him to 99 years in the Folsom Pen.
Mercy on me. The judge, he smiled as he picked up his pen. 99 years in the Folsom Pen. 99 years underneath that ground. I can't forget the day I shut that bad bitch down. Come on, you gotta listen unto me. Lay off that whiskey and let that cocaine be.
But there's no remorse. The song ends. The remorse is in the drinking and the drugging. There's no remorse for violence against a partner. And I'm stuck in traffic wondering why I never heard this before. How come I didn't notice it? How long has this been going on? I'm not sure I can even enjoy this album or any of the Johnny Cash catalog anymore.
We got married in a fever.
I turn off the album. I don't think I want to listen anymore. And as cute and as sweet as Jackson is, I need to digest Cocaine Blues. So Cocaine Blues has set off a trigger in me. Over the course of the next month, I started noticing the normalization of domestic violence in my music collection. Here, the Rolling Stones show us abusive relationships don't start out violent. It begins with control and jealousy.
Under my thumb, her eyes are just kept to herself. Under my thumb, well, I can't steal look at someone else. It's down to me. Oh, that's what I say. The way she talks when she's spoken to. Down to me, the change has come. She's under my thumb. Say so.
There's this Jimi Hendrix classic rock staple.
Hey Joe, I said, where you going with that gun in your hand? I'm going out to shoot my old lady. You know I caught her messing around with another man.
It doesn't take long to escalate violence.
Valentine, I killed my Valentine. And I laughed until I cried for my Valentine.
And we can't forget this Guns N' Roses song that peaked at number 18 on the Billboard charts.
I used to love her, but I had to kill her.
And in Viva Chicago, the guys in Wilco fantasize about killing a lover.
I dreamed about killing you again last night, and it felt all right to me. Dying on the banks of Embarcadero skies, I sat and watched you bleed. Buried you alive in a fireworks display.
And even this band, this kid-friendly pop music staple of a band that I was raised on. Yeah, the Beatles also wrote this domestic violence ditty.
Well, I'd rather see you dead, little girl, than to be with another man. You better keep your head, little girl, or I won't know where I am. You better run for your life if you can, little girl. Hide your head in the sand, little girl. Catch you with another man, that's the end.
And I'll admit and take responsibility. Not only do all these songs reside in my music collection, I've played some of these songs on the radio. I've been an irresponsible broadcaster. I've been complicit in the normalization of domestic violence. And all these years, I thought I was a feminist. And as I dig through my shelves of CDs and albums, I can't help but wonder, how did this happen? How was I so deaf to this violence? So the patriarchy has successfully colonized everything, especially rock and pop music. So it's time for me to take a deep dive into my music and listen with an analytical ear, beyond the guitars and melodies that so easily get stuck in my head. So I'm going to start at the beginning, at the onset of my record collecting. And over the course of the next year, I'm going to be analyzing and listening to the lyrics and trying to figure out how this happened.
Thanks for joining us. My name is Gabriela Daza, and I am an intern at Scrap Prometheus Radio Project. Indie Radio Garden is a Prometheus Radio Project production.